Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, how are you?
I'm doing well, dude. Still, the news trickles in.
Yeah, we've had two things happen over the last 4 or 5 days. Like right after we do the podcast, we're even recording a little bit early this week because Mike is a sailor. He's going out on a boat.
Something like that.
Is it going to be like Deadliest Catch?
It could be.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you going to be looking for different marine life or what's the purpose of this journey?
To basically not drown. That's the purpose.
Are you the skipper or Gilligan in this situation?
Oh, I'm definitely Gilligan.
You're Gilligan.
No doubt.
All right. Is Ginger or Marianne coming on the boat, or is it just you and the skipper?
I think it's just me and the professor.
Oh, the professor.
Yeah, I believe so. I think that's right.
This sounds like a great trip. I'm really broken up. I wasn't invited.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll take pictures and let you know how it all turns
out.
Dude,
I'm looking forward to hearing about your voyage.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Speaking of voyages, someone coming from the East Coast to the West Coast, the Sharks have two new players, but we'll start first with a gentleman we talked about last week being a new addition to the free agent pile, joining Scott Hannon as a defensive defenseman. Mr. Colin White lasted all of, 8 hours as an unrestricted free agent before. Rumors are that the Sharks and the Pittsburgh Penguins were the two teams most interested in his services, and he chose to come to the West Coast, which almost never happens, dude.
Almost never.
Colin White, new San Jose Shark. Thoughts?
It's good. Now we have 75 defensemen instead of 74. This seems to me like the Sharks are going the, imitation is the finest form of flattery situation like they've done in the past. This year, they are emulating Vancouver. Vancouver had 8 or 9 defensemen last year. It looks like the Sharks now have 8 on the roster, including Jim Vandermeer, Colin White, and Justin Braun, if we think Braun is going to be there. So Sharks are going to have a lot of options on the blue line. There's no doubt about that. So we got him for a year. He's 33 years old. We got him for a year for $1 million. He's been a regular NHL player since he was 19 years old and spent his entire professional career with the Devils. So Devils looking to shed salary. They got rid of Brian Ralston. They got rid of Colin White, and their loss is our gain. What kind of slot are you thinking about for Colin White? Is this a guy, although he is making the same as Jim Vandermeer, is he going to be in the lineup every night?
Yes.
You think so?
I think without a doubt, he's going to play every night. He's considerably better player than Jim Vandermeer.
Right.
Jim Vandermeer probably was the person most broken up about this signing because he's going to eat up Jim Vandermeer's playing time, really. And Vandermeer probably thought he had a shot at maybe being on that third pairing, and now he really becomes an extra guy. Colin White, last year he led the Devils in PK time. He's been a mainstay on their PK for years. And that's going to be where he's going to earn his $1 million for the Sharks. They need a lot of help on the penalty kill. And this is just another way of limiting or managing Dan Boyle's minutes. You're not going to ride him into the ground anymore because you've added a player who you can trust back there. I think he's a natural partner for Jason Demers, dude. I think it's a perfect player to put with him.
Right.
He's very capable.
On another note, do you think this indicates a lack of confidence that the Sharks management might have in Justin Braun?
I don't know if it's a lack of confidence. I think it's just, I'm not going to be upset if he spends 3/4 of the year being an AHL All-Star and racking up 45, 50 points for Worcester and playing with Nick Petrecki. And I don't think that's going to be a bad thing, I think what would be a bit of a mismanagement situation is if you have Braun just riding the plane every day and carrying Dan Boyle's skates around and not having him get on the ice. He's not going to play. You want to have arguably your most NHL ready defensive prospect getting regular shifts, right?
Yeah, I would think.
I don't think it's not that he's not in the long-term plans. And, you know, I know that there was some debate about that. Well, now Demers and Braun, one of them is expendable in a trade. I don't see that as being the case, dude, do you?
No, I don't think you get rid of young defensive prospects, really, under any conditions. I can't.
Not
I
at the moment.
I can't think of it. If you're one small piece away and you're the massive favorite to win the Cup, you know, we talked about the Sharks having to manage it and their window is closing, but I don't think, you know, they've thrown their hat in the ring by trading Setoguchi, by trading Charlie Coyle. They've certainly indicated that they're willing to gamble and try and win a Cup in the next couple of years. You don't go overboard and just literally trade every good player you have that's under 25.
Right.
And I sort of think that might be where the Sharks would go if they got rid of Braun or Demers, because I wonder who they would get in return that would be the right kind of player.
It would have to be a significant piece, you know, something, you know, of great value now and even later, you know, not a rental. You know, I don't think you're going to move an impact young defenseman. It'll also really depend on the development of another Sharks prospect, Taylor Doherty. You know, if he sticks in Worcester this year, or if they return him to juniors, you know, if he has a good year and he plays in the AHL and plays well, you know, maybe they'll decide that they can part with one of those two guys,
right,
and make a move later. But I don't think we're going to see either of them traded now, even though there is still a little bit of a need up front. You're right, dude. This is a bit of a Vancouver love child right now.
I think so. Seems like it.
With the Sharks having eight NHL-ready defensemen, but it sure worked for them. It got them to the finals. When Ham Hughes went down, they had guys they could put in. And, you know, the Sharks weren't in that position when they lost to Mariners. You had to turn to Kent Huskins, and that wasn't good.
No.
You know, he added nothing.
Right.
The irony is that Ken Huskins is making the same money as Colin White, which...
And Jim Vandermeer.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Really.
Considering.
You know, Colin White is a way better player than Ken Huskins. So I like it, dude. I think there's absolutely no risk here. You bring in an NHL veteran who can play every night.
It's 1 year. Doesn't break the bank.
No. And if it works out well, then good times. He hits. He blocks shots. He knows his role. He's going to be a good partner, I think, for Demers in the third pairing. Dude.
All right, dude. So there's another move, though. That wasn't the only move of the week. The Sharks...
This happened last night or this morning?
Just recently, James Shepherd, a name that I haven't heard in the NHL for a while, and doing research, I know why. Another trade with Minnesota.
Number three.
It seems like Doug Wilson and Chuck Fletcher have a regular poker game or something going here, and where they're trading more than $20 chips.
Right.
And so the Sharks give up a third-round pick for James Shepherd, who was a first-round draft pick. I think he was a number...
He was number nine.
Number nine overall.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that, it seems like not a bad deal, but... James Shepherd didn't play in the NHL at all last year, and I read something this morning saying he was on crutches as of a couple of weeks ago.
Right, he had a second knee surgery. The deal with him last year was that, I guess he had like an ATV accident. He's the Jeff Kent of hockey.
He's the Jeff Kent of hockey, that's
right. And the Monte Ellis of hockey. I mean, these guys who have these injuries that have to do with playing some sort of, you know, dangerous recreational sport off the ice... You know, Shepherd actually, I guess he broke his kneecap, missed the whole season last year, and actually was suspended without pay.
Right.
So he didn't even get paid last year.
Because they said it violated the terms of his contract.
Right.
Yeah.
So there sort of was a point of no return, I think, with that player at this point. You know, that's kind of hard to... I'm sure he was like, F you. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
They were not, you know...
Thrilled
with him. So him being moved is not surprising. The thing with Shepherd, dude, is his young credentials look amazing. I mean, he was the number one pick at the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. He had a great junior career. He was drafted number nine in 2006 by the Wild. They brought him up immediately to play, and that seemed to be a huge mistake.
Yeah, in retrospect, because immediately he didn't really seem to have much of an impact. You look at his point totals, and this is a guy who scored 90 points in 60 games, and all of a sudden he's scoring 10 points in 80 games.
Yeah, his career numbers are pretty bad. 224 NHL games, 11 goals, 49 assists.
Right.
For a guy who I think was projected to be a top six forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that that's not what the Sharks... The Sharks are... I look at this as they're trying to replace Charlie Coyle and Devin Setoguchi in the young forward,
mm-hmm.
you know,
department.
And this guy's 23. His resume is equal to both of those players. He has not...
Not to sit...
His resume prior to the NHL
okay.
is comparable.
Okay.
He's a top 10 draft pick, high-profile junior player who has been a huge disappointment
right.
in the NHL. And reading wild fan blogs, I mean, they are throwing a party right now that he's gone. I mean, he was
yeah.
the... They mocked him openly.
Mm-hmm.
So... For that reason, dude, I mean, honestly, I'm not that excited about this. I don't get it. I understand the logic as I just explained it,
mm-hmm.
but why do you bring in a guy like this? Where does he fit in here? Like, what's the expectations, dude?
Could he be the next Kyle Wellwood, the guy with second line hands playing on the third line? He's much bigger than Kyle Wellwood.
Well, yeah, but
he's 6'2", 210.
I guess that's where I'm disappointed, because if that's the hope,
mm-hmm.
that's not the direction I want to see them go with that open forward spot. I think they need a physical player. This guy doesn't play the power play. He doesn't kill penalties. And he can't score even strength. So other than that, he's great. Now, I'm puzzled by this. I really am. I'm not sure what the plan is for him. Supposedly not going to be ready in time for training camp.
Right.
It's a two-way deal from what I understand. So he can go, you know, are they just going to put him in Worcester and hope he figures it out?
Maybe. It could be.
A third round pick for that? I mean, is this guy worth a third round pick?
Well,
even though it's 2013 third round pick.
I did a little research on this. So I'm turning over my
okay,
notebook.
I'm excited.
Some research.
Do it.
All right. So we gave up a third round draft pick, right?
Right.
So I looked at the draft years from 1992 to 2002. Okay. Third round draft picks.
Wow, dude.
Only third round. Just looking at the number of players that were drafted that year versus the number of players that played 200 NHL games. James Sheppard has already played 200 NHL games. Okay.
Right.
So if you had to guess the percentage of the players that drafted in the third round in those 10 years, which... You know, it's not a huge sample. It's 313 players. But that's, you know, that's a fair amount. Okay, so, you know, some years there's going to be more that play. Other years are going to be less. And I went to 2002 because, you know, 200 games is four seasons worth, roughly. And, you know, if pretty young players would only get to there. So you can't go too much later than that. Otherwise, you got players that are too young. So what rough percentage do you think players drafted in the third round play 200 games in the NHL?
30%.
It's actually less.
Okay.
It's 20%.
Wow.
Okay. So what the Sharks essentially did is they took a 1-in-5 shot on James Sheppard. Okay. That's sort of the way I look at it, because if you give that pick to Minnesota, Minnesota's going to have roughly a 1-in-5 chance they're going to get a guy that's going to play 200 games, just like James Sheppard. And actually the Sharks have a known guy that's already played 200 NHL games, so they know he can sort of do it. If you think about it, if you think about it in terms of a first round pick, it looks bad.
Right.
But if you think about it in terms of what they gave up, a third round pick, this may not be so bad. I think you're right, though. I'm not sure where he fits on the team. I'm not sure what their plan is for him. If he's going to go to Worcester and they're going to say, listen, kid, you got to prove yourself all over again in this organization, because frankly, you haven't shown squat in the last 3 or 4 years. And so maybe you're awesome in junior, but you got to prove it now, you know, with a team that frankly needs some guys in Worcester. So you prove yourself in Worcester, we're going to give you a shot, but you got to do that first. If they want to plug him into the lineup right now, there's a lot of risk involved in that. But in terms of a gamble, I don't see this as a terrible gamble. If they give up a second or a first round pick for James Sheppard, I would not be happy. But a third round pick seems to be more along the right lines. Maybe they know something about his health that we don't know. You know, this is a guy that he can come in and he's going to get over whatever he's got and he's going to be able to play at some point. I don't know. It seems weird that they would sort of go off the radar, but actually it doesn't seem weird at all because that's exactly what Doug Wilson does time and again.
I guess if you're looking for someone to come in and play that skills, hands position on the third line, why not just bring back Kyle Wellwood?
I know. Maybe they want somebody bigger. I could not tell you.
That's what puzzles me. I'm hoping that the plan is with him is to send him down to the minors, let him try and figure it out, hope he can become a 60-70 point scorer down there for Worcester this year, and then you can bring him up to spell people and play top six forward type minutes instead of trying to force the guy into like a third line role that it mm-hmm. seems like he was not very good at in Minnesota.
Right. He was playing under Jacques Lemaire. Some of the stuff I read said he was in the doghouse quickly, early with Jacques Lemaire. Very defensive system, not a lot of scoring ability. And this seems like a guy that has that sort of scoring ability. Maybe he wants to be creative on the ice, and that's not... And playing for Jacques Lemaire isn't the kind of coach you want to play under if you're a creative player.
Right. I remember the last time I really heard his name was when Todd Richards was hired to be the Minnesota Wild coach, and everybody's excited because here comes this offensive-minded coach, and James Shepherd is really going to blossom. And he was... I think that was his worst year, actually.
Yeah.
He was so bad. And then last year, he couldn't even get on the ice. So, dude... I don't know. Maybe we've even wasted too much time talking about this, but a real out of left field move by Doug Wilson, again, completing the trifecta with Chuck Fletcher over in Minnesota. Speaking of Minnesota, dude, the latest Becoming Wild episode came out today.
I watched it.
I watched it too.
What do you think?
I was a little disappointed that there wasn't a lot of coverage of the Burns trade.
I was a lot disappointed.
You know, all of a sudden it just happened.
Yeah.
I liked right before they say it, one of the guys at the table was like, get ready to duck. You know?
Yeah, right.
But the crowd, the shots they showed, now they're going to show it from a Minnesota perspective.
That's right.
They showed a really positive reaction to this deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting to hear them talk about their philosophy for this team, which, you know, listening to the podcast last week, you know, you kind of touched on this too, is that Minnesota is they're setting their timetable back. They're putting together young players. They're not going to try and win a Stanley Cup next year. They drafted a Swedish defenseman who they feel probably can replace Brent Burns. So they're looking to stockpile talent.
Right.
And that's where I don't really understand a guy like Danny Heatley fitting in
right.
to that plan when he isn't exactly a role model by all accounts based on his previous behavior around the league. I felt like Seto and Heatley came off kind of douchey in the video, actually, dude. What did you think about the clips they chose of them?
Well, I showed them looking for a place to live, right? They were looking to rent a place or something, and
yeah,
I don't know. They seemed a little shell-shocked, I guess.
Well, I'm sure, you know.
They didn't show Burns at all. I was a little disappointed the way they showed that whole thing. Not that I really expected to get, you know, audio or video of the actual negotiation between Fletcher and Doug Wilson, but I was hoping there might be a little bit more buildup about it, you know, because it's after the fact. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like them talking about who they're going to give up for whom, but sort of like, you know, maybe some B-roll of, oh, you know, we've got an offer for a big player and, you know, maybe we should do that because we're trying to get younger and sort of build it that way as opposed to just like, here's a draft. Oh, yeah, duck your head. There's going to be a big trade. Okay, Burns is gone. Okay, what's for dinner? Sweet. Yeah. Okay,
all of a sudden, it just kind of happened. I was disappointed in that, too. We've seen NHL Network does some behind-the-scenes videos of the draft that we've seen some negotiations between GMs caught on tape. Not real specifics, but more than that, you know, the one thing they did show them taking calls at the table for the Sharks draft pick that they got, but they ended up not making that move. But yeah, not as behind the scenesy as I was hoping.
Right.
But still a great web series that people should check out. You can watch it on Minnesota Wild's NHL.com website on their video. It's called Becoming Wild.
Yeah, it's good. It is still good.
All right, so we've got James Shepherd. We've got Colin White. That's really the Sharks news, dude. I mean, the Sharks still have approximately, you know, $4.5 million of cap space, and that's assuming Shepherd is on the team at some point,
right.
and Braun is not. You know, Shepard's either gonna be there at the expense of Ben Ferriero, or, you know, one or the other, right? Mm-hmm. It's not both. They're kind of the same dude. So hopefully there's still gonna be another player coming in to compete for that third line spot. We're seeing some teams do some training camp invite slots. We saw Vancouver this week invite former Shark captain Owen Nolan and Todd Fedoruk to camp. What do you make of Owen Nolan potentially being up in Vancouver?
I'm more surprised about Todd Fedoruk, to be honest. Todd Fedoruk, really?
Can't hurt, right?
No, but I guess that's sort of where we're at. It's funny, I was actually at the at Sharks Ice maybe a couple weeks ago, and Owen Nolan was out on the ice with his son, who is maybe 3 years old, and skating around in a little Minnesota Owen Nolan jersey, which was cute as hell. And kid's skating around. I mean, the kid's going to be better than me in like a year and a half, I swear. So, you know, Owen Nolan's just feeding him pucks and having him shoot and stuff. But yeah, he's going to go and see if he can make the team on Vancouver. I guess that's sort of where the business has gone this year. I mean, we saw the Sharks bring in, you know, guys, Dan Hinote to try out. So it seems like that's sort of the path for aging veterans at this point. It's not you're going to get the Colin White deal. I mean, Colin White's not that old. He's only 33. So even guys over 35, it seems like that's the route now, is you get a tryout deal and you see if you can come in and make the team. So
we saw that with Bill Guerin last year with the Flyers, right? And I think people expected he was going to make, and he did not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Owen Nolan's got long odds.
I think so too.
I give it...
Especially on a team that good.
10% chance that he makes that team.
Yeah.
And I think after he does not make that team, he's going to hang it up, dude.
I think so, unless he's got other feelers out that... You know, maybe, you know, we might be interested, that kind of thing. And he might just keep himself in game shape another year in case, you know, one team has a bunch of injuries or something along those lines. Because he did play in Switzerland last year. He played professional hockey last year. So I'm not sure. I'm sure a family situation comes into it. If you got small kids, you don't want to be trekking all around the world to try and play hockey in the third division of the Swedish Elite League or something.
Right.
So. But yeah, I think this is more or less his last hurrah. I think this year, sooner, you know, he's either going to catch on with the team this year and revitalize his career, or he's going to be out.
How about Patrick Sharp re-signing with the Chicago Blackhawks?
He got a lot of money, but he did have 34 goals last year. Coincidence? I think not. Amazing how he comes up with a ton of goals right before his contract's up. He's a good second line center who can score a lot. That's a lot of money for second line center, but I think they made the right move in signing him. That deal doesn't seem completely outlandish in that context. So I don't think they overpaid for Patrick Sharp. They certainly know what they have in a player like that, and I know a lot of teams would love to have a guy like Patrick Sharp. So good on Chicago for keeping him around, and probably bad for the Sharks because we're going to be facing Patrick Sharp. And now it looks like all of their main offensive weapons are now more or less locked up. Hossa, Kane, Taves, Sharp, all these guys, they're all going to be there forever. So...
Speaking of lots of money, Shea Weber gets his arbitration award, dude. $7.5 million for 1 year. He will be a restricted free agent one more year after that, and then he hits the open market. The fact that the Preds even let it get to this point, I think last week we talked about how surprised we are that that even happened.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, the sticking point here is that he wants them to have a Stanley Cup contender in Nashville. Did Nashville basically hose themselves on keeping Weber here, and have they now alienated Rene and Suter?
Possible. I like I said last week, I don't understand how you could have a top three defenseman in the NHL basically in your lap, and he says, I want to stay here, and you don't make it happen.
Right.
I just don't understand how you don't pay a guy like that. He's your captain. He's your best player. You keep him. And if you don't want a guy like that, then you should just trade him right away and get something for him. Because, I mean, I'm sure there are teams who line up around the block to get a guy like Shea Weber. So, why would you...
Every team in the NHL would bid on him. Every team, right?
Why would you string him along? Because, I mean, if they're not thinking of re-signing Suter and Rene, then they should just cut bait and trade him right now. Because he's not going to want to stick.
I think they want to keep all three of those players, but they want to do it on their own terms. And those guys... I mean, if Brizgalov got that money, what's Rene going to get?
Yeah, but Philly was insane for giving Brizgalov that kind of money.
But that's the point, is if Rene knows that that's what waits for him on the open market, I mean, somebody's going to do that. I mean, he is a top five goalie in the league, and he's young.
Right.
Someone's going to do it. Some team will it.
Sure, sure.
You know, and Ryan Suter.
Who knows? Maybe the Flyers. It could be the Flyers again.
Yeah, who knows, dude? So, and Ryan Suter is an outstanding young defenseman, too. And I mean, there's talk that he wants similar money to what Shea Weber got. Now, that's a little nutty, right?
That seems a little outlandish.
But he's a $5 million five. And he's a, we say, his benchmark really is the Brent Burns deal, probably,
right? So. Yeah.
I mean, that's they're very equivalent players.
That's a good comp, yeah.
So I think Nashville has screwed the pooch on this one, dude, and they're gonna pay for it, you know? They're gonna pay for it. A lot of people around the league think there is just a very slim chance of Shea Weber staying now.
Right.
Because you know, of how they treated him and how they went about it, and they might see the core of their team kind of fall apart.
I know we might get off on a bit of a tangent here, but, you know, David Poile's always been seen as, like, this great GM, and I know we had this conversation off the air, you know, yesterday or the day before, and it's just, I understand he, if you look at a metric like how many standings points he gets per dollar, he's one of the best GMs in the league, but to me, I don't, It's hard for me to think a GM that gets his team to the first round of the playoffs and they don't really expect to win in the first round. I didn't even expect them to win last year, even though they did win. That's their only playoff series victory ever. You know, a guy that puts together a team with that kind of caliber where 50% of the NHL teams make it to the playoffs and he can't, you know, basically he doesn't have much of a good chance of winning a round unless he gains several more pieces, in my opinion. Why is this guy so touted as one of the great GMs in the league?
I think that people would, on the pro side of that, answer that. It's not his fault. It's a similar situation that we see with Darcy Regier in Buffalo. He has an owner that isn't able to spend the money in a mid to low level market, and he has a budget, and that's all he's allowed to spend. And so he has to be frugal in that way, in the fact that they were able to produce NHL caliber talent from their own system is why he is a good GM. On the flip side, I would say that, you know, he seems to be, you know, it's like they're practically the Oakland A's of hockey, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to turn into that. They're going to develop these great players and they can't keep them.
Right.
So what's the point? Then sell the team, get out of the biz, dude. the fact that he even had to go that route with Shea Weber gets the big thumbs down from me.
Right.
You know, make it happen, son.
Or trade him.
Or trade him. If you can't keep him, get something for him instead of just going through that. What just must be such an uncomfortable process. Horrible process.
Right, right.
Speaking of defensemen and lots of money, how about Drew Doughty maybe holding out, dude?
Same kind of deal. I don't know what I thought I heard a rumor that they offered him $6.5 million for 9 years or something along those lines.
And he turned it down?
Yeah, I think he turned it down. That's a lot of money.
That is.
That's a lot of cheddar.
I'm really hoping that ends up being a long, dragged out, distracting process.
That would be nice for the Sharks, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You know, what could end up happening there is that might be a team that if this ends up being a holdout situation, and they're willing, they have a little bit of money. I mean, that might be a team that goes for Campoli
mm-hmm.
to fill that spot. Say, you know what, Doughty, fine. You know, sit out. We're going to bring in Campoli. We're going to bring in McCabe. You know, I mean, someone to take your spot until you're ready to come play some hockey again. So let's not kind of keep an eye on that, dude.
Yeah.
As we're running down here against the clock, I know we're trying to keep this manageable. I want to ask you two more things, dude. The first one is, what is your take on the lovely Sean Avery's arrest this week?
Not very smart on his. It seemed like
pushing a police officer.
It seemed like the classic incident of, you know, just megalomania for a professional athlete. I can get away with anything I want. I can turn down the cops when they order me to open the door. I can push past them or push a cop. I don't know what the details are. I mean, that just seems like the ultimate level of hubris. Oh, yeah, cops are at my door. I'm just going to disregard them. That's just not smart. That's just one of the dumber things you can do. And that doesn't seem to be all that out of character for Sean Avery, frankly.
My favorite part of the story is that when he was getting released, he asked them if he could go out the back door so he could avoid the media. They said no. You go out the front door, meet and like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job. The last segment, dude, that I want to do, and I'm going to do this, I think, every week until training camp starts, is I'm going to present two players to you. I'm going to ask you, between the two, who would you rather see get a training camp invite from the Sharks? I'm not going to say either of them is going to happen. Say between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to go a little bit off script. So the first player is former Edmonton Oiler and Columbus Blue Jacket forward Ethan Morrow.
Okay.
Or former Washington Capital and Columbus Blue Jacket forward Chris Clark.
Hmm.
One of those guys, you're hoping them to get an invite to camp. We're not signing them to a guaranteed deal. It's just an invite. Who'd you pick?
Oh, that's a tough one, dude. That's a good... You really... I'm going to go Morrow.
Yeah.
Because I know he was very well respected in a really difficult situation in Edmonton. You know, he's one of those guys that sort of does everything right. Because he played on the West Coast, I'm a little bit more familiar with his game than I am with Clark. So for that reason, I'm going to have to go with Morrow.
Yeah. The only thing that turns me off a little bit on Morrow is that I know he had a really hard year last year with injuries, you know, big injury problems. And that must still be in some GM's mind. I mean, I think he broke his hand, then he, you know, tore his groin, and then he had a baby pinky nail or problem, or I don't know.
Whatever.
There are some interesting guys still sitting out there, and we're going to start to see some of these players accept training camp invites, or they're just going to retire. And a guy like Morrow, maybe he's just going to hang him up.
Like Jarkko Ruutu, he's going to play overseas.
Right.
I don't know if that's a done deal, but I saw some on Twitter that Ruutu might be signing back in his native Finland.
Sadness.
It is a little bit of a bummer.
Would like to have him in teal, but, you know, dude, we'll keep playing this game until training camp starts. It seems like it's just forever, dude.
I know.
But you know Doug Wilson will do something completely unexpected in the next couple weeks.
That's right.
And we'll be back here to talk about it. Dude, enjoy sailing.
I will, dude. Talk to you when I get back, hopefully.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.